Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Well, the top story, of course, is the ongoing Los Angeles riots and all of the left that appears to be very coordinated and very heavily funded in Los Angeles. Those protesters that are now throwing rocks at police cars, committing acts of violence, burning cars. It's just escalating and protesting the lawful enforcement of federal immigration law. And this shouldn't be really all that controversial, but of course, to the left and their outcome-oriented view, they want to make this as controversial as possible. And so, of course, this is going on in California, where Governor Gavin Newsom is slipping a little bit because he tried to position himself as maybe a little bit more moderate, not quite as a crazy leftist as Kamala Harris, who just totally crashed and burned in the 2024 election, and positioning himself maybe to be a more moderate candidate heading into 2028. But the mask is slipping. He's completely slipping because he is giving a full-throated defense of the illegals and the lawbreakers in California, and even going as far as taunting President Donald Trump to come and arrest him. So listen to what he had to say. This is cut two.
I mean, it's, again, sober and serious moment. Meanwhile, can I just add, you know, and this is why I told the president, just get it over with. Arrest me. Move on. If you need some head to scalp, do it with me. But stop messing with these kids. Stop messing with four-year-olds, kids in elementary school. We've got kids. We have hundreds of graduations down here. Kids are not going to their own graduations. Families, grandparents here legally, mixed status families in some cases, scared to death to go to a graduation. People are scared to walk down the streets. It's not just Home Depot's getting their car washed. We have incidences. I didn't believe it because what was I thinking? I actually believe when they said this is not true. But then I saw videos. They're doing checkpoints, checking people's IDs. We've never seen this kind of deployment in so many actions. It's mass panic out here in the nation's largest county, in the nation's largest state. Good, hardworking people, decent people. These are not the criminals. These are not the thugs.
So many responses to that, but let's welcome in Michael Donnelly, who is an attorney and a constitutional law professor. And beyond just the sheer ridiculousness of this and how nothing, I posted on social media a response, nothing says defender of democracy like suing to stop the National Guard from restoring order after you let your own state burn. I mean, so there's that. But first question before we get to that lawsuit, Mike Donnelly, is can and should Trump just say, all right, fine, you know, I'll arrest you because you are obstructing law enforcement?
Well, I mean, should the president of the United States arrest the governor of California? I would say no. I don't think that's a good idea.
Dang it. That was not the response I was hoping for. But
sorry. I'm sorry. You know I'm a friend of the states, and even when it comes to California, I don't think that would be a good look for anybody. But what President Trump is doing is the right thing by preparing to potentially invoke the Insurrection Act. If these protests continue to spiral out of control, and if the governor is not going to do what his job is, which he has sworn to uphold the California Constitution as well as the United States Constitution and protect the people of California from criminal activity and this sort of thing, President Trump is doing the right thing by positioning National Guard, by activating federal forces, and the law supports that. You know, Jenna, there's three statutes we need to talk about here, okay? Some people may or may not have heard of the Posse Comitatus Act. Very important piece of legislation passed right after the Civil War, basically saying, look, we're not going to use federal troops to conduct law enforcement. And that's a longstanding tradition, and I think that's really important. We don't want the military doing law enforcement. We want them focused on defending our country from invasion. But that's the point. The point is the president has said, and I tend to agree with him, we've had an invasion over the last 10, 20 years of illegal immigration, which the federal government, through mostly Democrat administrations, has allowed, has fostered, has encouraged. But the Posse Comitatus Act says generally federal law enforcement, federal troops are not supposed to be in law enforcement. But you've then got two provisions in Title 10, Section 12406, and then the Insurrection Act. And Section 12406 allows the president to activate and use National Guard. Though here's where I think the lawsuit that Gavin Newsom filed yesterday, or his the state of California filed yesterday, comes in, is the law does say something about generally the governors are supposed to be involved in that, but there are exceptions to that. The president has not invoked the Insurrection Act, but I think he probably could. The Insurrection Act is designed to, allow the federal government to go in when there's a rebellion or when federal laws cannot be enforced. And I think on that latter ground, the president would be on very strong ground saying, look, we are trying to enforce federal immigration law. All over the country, but in Los Angeles, you've got tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens who should be subject to the immigration law that the federal government has to enforce. And if California is not going to support that, then I think it's appropriate for the president to invoke that provision, potentially, of the Insurrection Act. I mean, look, come on. We're going to call, ten thousands of protesters in Washington, D.C., and some who wandered around the Capitol building an insurrection for 3 hours. Fine, yeah, okay, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. People can argue about that. And this isn't, though? Really? Come on.
Yeah, and this is where then the definition of insurrection, maybe is a little bit arguable. But you mentioned, Section 12406 of 10 USC, and this provision mirrors the statute that's the Insurrection Act, but it's specific to the National Guard and allows the president to federalize the Guard units or take them out of state control in cases specifically, not just of invasion or rebellion, but inability to enforce U.S. law. And this is where the enforcement of federal immigration law, even if Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass and anybody in the state of California disagrees with the law, well, you can't just go and riot and commit acts of violence and literally impede law enforcement from enforcing those laws. That's not the way that we peacefully protest, which is a constitutionally protected right. It's not how we petition our government. It's not how we change our law or we further legislate. I mean, these are things that are seriously dangerous. And so when California is suing Trump over the National Guard deployment, I mean, this is very much Mike Donnelly shades, I think, of 2020. And we all remember the George Floyd riots. And when President Trump was in the news then for potentially invoking the Insurrection Act and, all of those things. And the left was trying purposefully to set him up. And this seems like there is an ongoing, similarly situated political angle here. They're just using immigration in the same way that they used race baiting in 2020. This is why my friend James Lindsay in the podcast this week is called Critical Immigration Theory, because we'd had critical race theory mm-hmm. in 2020. This is now critical immigration theory. So on the merits of the California lawsuit, what is Gavin Newsom actually suing over, and how quickly might that be decided?
Well, I think it'll be decided pretty quickly. I haven't read the lawsuit. I think what he's probably suing over, however, is the language in the statute that says the governor is supposed to, order the troops to be federalized or to consent to it. you know, and so there's a little bit of ambiguity, though, in that statute. And so the court may look at that. But at the end of the day, it would be very appropriate for the president to invoke the Insurrection Act, in my opinion. And I think he should have done it back in 2020. And I also think that the conditions are very different than they were in 2020. The American people are fed up with the left, I think, the average American. You know, there's some polling out there that suggests that people are pretty supportive of what the president's doing with respect to immigration. And when the media is out there trying to say that these are peaceful protests when cars are burning, just like what they were doing to Elon and his Tesla dealerships, and couch this as quote unquote free speech, that's absolutely absurd. And I think the American people are seeing through that, you know, like the emperor has no clothes. And finally, is what I say, finally, the American people seem to be waking up. And so I think if the Democrats and, you know, Gavin Newsom and his folks want to keep on doubling down and saying, oh, there's nothing going on, or, oh, it's just a very narrow part of Los Angeles where it's only disrupting a few parts of the town, it's not really a big deal. I think the American people are looking at this and saying, this is insane. We elected Donald Trump to enforce federal immigration laws. Illegal immigration is a problem. We elected him to fix it. And he's trying to do that. And if people like Gavin Newsom and others around the country, Karen Bass in Los Angeles, the mayor there, aren't going to support him, then he should be doing what he needs to do to enforce the law. And so I think people are going to be overall quite supportive. And I think this inures to the president's political benefit to continue to be very strong on this issue as he is. And I think it's very appropriate.
Yeah, I agree. And the lawsuit, I mean, this is so hypocritical if we look and contrast this with 2020. And again, as I always say, if the Democrats didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all. But the complaint actually reads, President Trump has repeatedly invoked emergency powers to exceed the bounds of lawful executive authority. The fact that Gavin Newsom is filing that in a lawsuit with a straight face after all of what he did with emergency powers in 2020, and he's actually going on a television network and suggesting that, you know, carding people for their immigration status, and, you know, we've never done this in the history of America. Yeah, I'm sorry, I remember vaccine cards. Like, this is just so utterly preposterous that he's actually arguing this in a context, especially when this statute literally says and reads that the governor does not have to consent when the president lawfully invokes this, when there is an insurrection or when there is when the law is not being enforced and there's an impediment there. I mean, this is just so beyond laughable. I hope that there is a judge somewhere that hears this, that points this out and just laughs in his face.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Jenna, because you know that very well, having been involved in defending, you know, John MacArthur and his church against Gavin Newsom back in 2020. And they were trying to keep the churches closed down. And, you know, the left have very short memories. They live only in the present. They don't remember what actually happened. And it doesn't matter. They're, you know, the hypocrisy that they have. They have no hypocrisy, no hypocrisy meter. They just do whatever they want to do. But I hope that the judge will rule that the president has the authority under this section of law. And if not, the president can invoke the Insurrection Act. I mean, it's been done before under this section by Lyndon Johnson did it, I think, in the 60s. And Eisenhower, I think, did it in the 50s. So it's not done frequently. But it has been done, and it seems that, you know, if, you know, the situation we have right now with the level of immigration, you know, the violations of the immigration law by so many people, it seems like this is as appropriate as it was back then.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that the left is saying that somehow this isn't an invasion, I mean, we're not talking about the riots themselves. And when Newsom talks about, you know, this is enforcing against, you know, our own citizens or whatever. No, I mean, the invasion we're talking about are all of the illegals, which is what ICE is trying to then go and enforce immigration law. And to impede that enforcement definitely gives rise to invocation of this statute. And to suggest somehow that the rules are different for Donald Trump than for any other president in the history of America. I mean, even looking at the Los Angeles riots of, you know, 1992. I mean, we've seen this just in recent U.S. history. I hope that the judicial the adjudication of all of this will be very clear and not just view this as, well, it's different for Donald Trump, because that's always what the media tries to characterize this as. And speaking of the media, in the last 2 minutes I have with you, Mike Donnelly, who's an attorney and constitutional law professor. You should follow him on X at Donnelly Speaks. This was also interesting to me in the clip that we played at the opening of Gavin Newsom, Governor Newsom, talking about, you know, just come arrest me, whatever. This was fascinating to me that the network that he chose to go on and say this is Midas Touch Network. And for those of you who aren't familiar with this, this is a complete leftist, extreme leftist group of individuals that actually rose to prominence on Twitter. Back then, it was called, you know, it was Twitter X, on social media, that was pushing back against the Trump administration, and really got a lot of prominence and popularity as a network of coordinated, really insane leftists, frankly, who were trying to promote a lot of leftist viewpoints and more of, you know, the extreme. And they are very well funded, and they're not one of these cable networks like, you know, ABC or MSNBC that are known to be leftist, but at least try to have some kind of modicum of, you know, hey, we're fair and balanced and we just report the news kind of thing. I mean, this is a network that is clearly biased. It's incredibly activist. And I just think, Mike Donnelly, it's really fascinating that this is the network that Gavin Newsom chose to go on to make these kinds of comments.
Well, that's not really surprising. I mean, he's got a friendly audience there, and he's communicating to his base. But to your point earlier, was he trying to reposition himself in a more moderate strain, looking at a possible run for the presidency? It is interesting to see how the political alignment is shifting and how the different Democrat leaders are reading the current situation as it relates to immigration. You know, as we run up to the midterms, it's going to be interesting to see how this works. But, you know, look, Gavin Newsom has brought this on himself. He's been governor there for a long time, and it's not just him, but previous governors in California. They've created this entitlement mentality where the illegals have come in. They've got driver's licenses, as Ron DeSantis was saying on the news clip before we came on. They give them health care. They let them go into schools. I mean, he was complaining on the news clip about how these quote-unquote mixed status families are afraid to go to graduations because they might get you know, arrested or whatever for being there. They brought this on themselves by not enforcing federal law and by not allowing the feds to enforce federal law. And now the chickens have come home to roost and they're paying for their foolishness.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and speaking of the midterms, all of this is interesting to watch and to play out. And do you think that this type of coordinated strategy, and specifically pushing back against a central part of the Trump mandate? I mean, I think there were two really main items that at least the American people who overwhelmingly voted for Trump wanted, which of course was DOGE and, you know, the accountability for all of our reckless government spending, you know, taxes wrapped up in all of that. So DOGE and immigration. I mean, those were the two really key things. And so is this a little too early? I mean, that the Democrats maybe should have waited strategically until, you know, maybe spring or summer of next year heading into the midterms?
That's an interesting question. I mean, when you look at polls, the number one thing that people voted on was the economy, and they believe that Donald Trump was the person to get the economy going again. And, you know, okay, we've had a little bit of a kerfuffle in the stock market over the tariffs, but everything has come back, and the gas is down, eggs are now affordable again, and the economy is going in the right direction. And then second and third were the things you just pointed out, DOGE, accountability, and immigration. And, you know, the Democrats are grasping at straws, I think. They don't really have an issue to stand on. Trump owns all three of those issues. They're going to have a very difficult time in the midterm. And it is befuddling to me to try to understand why they think supporting illegal aliens protesting, riding around on motorcycles, waving the Mexican flag while cars are burning, helps them. I don't understand that. Can you explain that to me?
Well, you know, I think that they're spending $20 million to try to explain it to young men, and it's not really going to be effective. But Mike Donnelly, really appreciate it as always. And we will continue to talk about this and another interesting lawsuit when we come right back here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. This June 24th marks 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But here's what you may not know. Abortion numbers have surged to a 10-year high. The battleground has shifted from the courtroom to our homes. Today, over 60% of abortions happen through the abortion pill, taken in silence and often alone. Preborn Network clinics are standing in the gap, meeting women in their most desperate hour. And here's what they're seeing. Young mothers, terrified and misled, are delivering their babies, tiny, perfectly formed, onto bathroom floors. These precious babies, once called just tissue, now are lifeless. 11% of these women who take the abortion pill will suffer serious health complications. Countless others carry emotional scars for a lifetime. When you give to Preborn, you're not just saving a baby, you're saving a mother as well. You're giving her hope, financial support, and the truth. Preborn has already rescued over 350,000 babies, but there are so many more who need our help. Your tax-deductible gift makes this mission possible. To donate now, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, as the riots are spreading across the nation, there's an interesting piece, or I guess just photograph of a map that's being shared across social media. I'm not sure where it originated, the accuracy of this, even though, you know, we're seeing that there are riots popping up even in my former home state of Colorado around Denver. There are, you know, other suggestions that that other riots in the same context will continue to spread. But this particular graphic is suggesting that particularly on Saturday, June 14th, there will be coordinated riots in major cities across the country, even including Florida, which I think is a little bit preposterous, because if anyone tries, I have absolutely no doubt that Governor DeSantis and his team will not act in the same way as Gavin Newsom and the state of California. But let's get Will Chamberlain's take. He is senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. And Will, we've been talking about the context of, you know, the lawsuit that Gavin Newsom filed to try to impede Donald Trump from actually utilizing the Federal Guard, a little bit about 10 U.S.C. Section, you know, 12406. And I just want to get your take also as a lawyer, similarly as my previous guest, on, you know, what exactly is going on here legally, where President Trump is on solid ground, and then also, you know, the political fallout here.
Yeah, I mean, I think President Trump is very clearly going to prevail here. The president has the authority under multiple federal statutes to call up the National Guard. I mean, it's not merely just for an insurrection. He has the right to call them up merely to protect federal buildings and federal assets if he wants to. The idea, you know, LAP is clearly not handling this. There's been continuing rioting for days, so I can't imagine there's any reasonable theory here that would say, you know, that that would allow, sorry, I just like lost my train of thought. If there's any reasonable theory that a court could strike this down on, and if they do, the Supreme Court would reject it right away.
Yeah, and if there is a venue that somehow is friendly to Gavin Newsom, and you know, that judge somehow rules at least temporarily in favor of Newsom, hopefully the Supreme Court would take that up and, you know, strike it down pretty quickly. But what can we anticipate, at least while this is pending? I mean, what we're seeing, the riots in LA expand. We're seeing, I mean, you know, this is an ongoing situation. It's not like we have, you know, 3 to 6 months for the courts to take their time adjudicating this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I actually don't think we'll see any sort of injunction here. I think, you know, and I think the Supreme Court would stay any injunction. So I think, you know, this is one of those cases where it's so clearly the president's military authority that even a Supreme Court that's been getting a little ornery isn't going to get in the way here. You know, this is just, it's just a really bad argument coming from Gavin Newsom. You know, there's obviously the federal government has the right to protect its assets in Los Angeles. Rioters have been actively obstructing ICE operations in Los Angeles, burning down cars, taking over city streets, and Newsom and Mayor Bass have been completely ineffectual. So we're certainly, I don't think there's any chance that this gets stopped.
And Will Chamberlain, you know, speaking then of kind of the 30,000 foot perspective of, you know, Trump's immigration mandate, I think from the American people they were mentioning last segment, I mean, this was one of the key voting issues in 2024. And what we saw with the Biden administration, you know, allowing just hundreds of thousands of illegals in, some of them that have been associated with gangs, violent, you know, all of these other things, but even just ignoring the law and having all of these people just in this mass infiltration that I would certainly characterize as an invasion. I think that that's even supported under a legal definition. Where is Trump at, and Tom Homan and, you know, the rest and DHS and ICE overall, not just specific to California, but overall in the fulfillment of that mandate to say, you know, we are going to crack down on how many illegals were brought here, especially under the Biden administration, and advance this forward? I mean, that was a key part of the America First agenda.
That's right. And I mean, they're, you know, they're working hard on it. Obviously, I think they're very much in need of additional funding. There's just, they need more staff, frankly. You know, under current law, it's not only the fact that they need a lot more ICE officials to be able to detain people, conduct these operations and find illegal aliens, but then they need, oh, there needs to be a lot more funding in terms of detention space. There needs to be a lot more funding in terms of immigration judges so that we can process people through under current law. And, you know, so yeah, all this needs money. But I think that, you know, they're working on it. They're clearly doing what they can. And I think people, you know, it's also, you know, you're imagine turning just a giant tanker around. That's kind of what it is to steer ICE away from its, you know, original, you know, under Biden, ICE was basically doing not all that much, occasionally deporting an extremely dangerous criminal, but that's about it. You know, ICE's mandate has changed, and it's taking some time to, you know, get things going in the right direction. But I know Tom Holmes doing a great job, and the other thing I'd say is that shouldn't forget that, you know, border crossing from ICE within months of Trump taking office, that's an incredible policy accomplishment. And so now it's the much harder job of finding the illegal aliens who are in the United States and getting them out.
I'm speaking with Will Chamberlain, who is senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. You can follow him on X as well. And, you know, and speaking of this whole mandate and the need for funding for some of this, you know, there are legitimate things that our federal government should spend money on, and immigration enforcement and the personnel that's required to fulfill that is one of them. And I think part of the frustration, a huge part of the frustration right now with Congress, is that it doesn't seem like those are particular priorities for Congress to be in lockstep with the Trump mandate. I mean, they're out here, you know, arguing about a lot of other things. There's problems, I think, with the One Big Beautiful Bill. There's a lot of issues with what DOE should have accomplished. So where is Congress in all of this?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think I have a different take from you on this. I think Congress is doing a good job here. You know, I remember being in the first Trump, in the first term, being incredibly frustrated that Congress would not pass a bill that funded the president's priorities. Remember, we were talking about getting a national emergency declaration so that the president could take money from other programs in the Department of Defense and use them to build the border wall. And it was a huge fight. We would have loved if we just had a bill that funded all these priorities outright, and the Big Beautiful Bill does that. I think there's been a fight over the Big Beautiful Bill because of CBO projections about increased deficit spending. But there's not, you know, everybody says there's pork in this bill. I don't know where the pork is. There's things in this bill I'd prefer weren't there, like the expansion of the SALT cap. But unfortunately, that was necessary to bring along the Republican New York representatives, who weren't going to vote for the bill otherwise. So, you know, I think actually, when you look at what's in this bill and what is being done to help serve the president's agenda, I mean, most of this bill was written by the White House in terms of the big immigration funding provisions. And I think that Congress did a good job in terms of shepherding those priorities through and funding them to the extent that the administration wanted.
And I agree with you that, you know, the White House is obviously very much for this. It's just a concern about more spending not having really any of the DOGE spending cut provisions in there. You have Marjorie Taylor Greene, even who's a big America First representative, suggesting that, you know, the AI regulation provision was kind of snuck in there. I mean, it's just there's a lot of things that really should have been taken out and line itemed instead of basically an omnibus. And so, you know, while we could talk about, you know, some of the particulars here, you know, that's the concern about, you know, yes, they're funding some good priorities, but overall, are they really meeting the overall agenda, not just of the White House, but I think of what the American people voted for? And DOGE is a central part of that. And so you can't isolate just, okay, you know, these are good provisions, so we'll let the rest that's not good slide. So hopefully we'll see the Senate and Senator Mike Lee has even suggested this, you know, take kind of a look at it and maybe amend this accordingly, and then it'll go, of course, back to the House, and we'll kind of see what happens there. But overall, do you think Will Chamberlain, the Democrats' obstruction, frankly, of ICE enforcement, of, you know, all of these things, is going to be effective when you have a lawsuit that, you know, just plainly ridiculous on face, hopefully won't succeed? But you're seeing this type of pushback, and the Democrats will generally, I mean, it's not like they're just going to say, oh, okay, well, my lawsuit failed, then never mind. I mean, they always try a different way to try to, you know, attack good conservative policy and, frankly, I think go against the U.S. Constitution. But do you think that they'll overall be in any way effective, especially as we're heading into the midterms next year?
I mean, I don't think the Democrats really will be effective here. I think the optics they're creating with these riots are making people more and more sympathetic to mass deportation, more and approve of the Trump administration's actions more and more. So I think the public support for this program will be there and will be resilient. I think, whatever lawfare they try, it's going to struggle because I don't think, the Alien Enemies Act is sort of one small piece of the overall puzzle of deporting people. And it's a new statute that in the sense it hasn't been used much in recent years. So there's some, you know, that's where you're seeing, you know, some of the more contentious and difficult legal cases. But with regard to, you know, the normal process of deportation is still available. So it's really just a question of funding and manpower and will. And I think the administration has that. And I don't think there's going to be a lot of viable challenges to the basic actions that ICE is taking here, which are finding people who are in the country illegally, detaining them and removing them.
Yeah, well, Will Chamberlain, in the last 2 minutes that I have with you, I want to switch gears here to talk about another story that hasn't, of course, made as much of the top headlines because of the ongoing situation in Los Angeles. But this comes from the Post-Millennial. Washington State Attorney General Nick Brown's office colluded with Perkins Coie, which is obviously a big law firm, on a federal lawsuit against Trump. This is the report. Emails reveal that Brown's office gave the law firm private advice on when and where to file the lawsuit against the Trump administration. So basically, Nick Brown, the Washington State AG, has been accused of colluding with the Seattle-based law firm Perkins Coie on its federal lawsuit against the Trump administration, raising ethics concerns. So what's going on here? And is this classic collusion in a criminal sense?
I mean, I don't think it'd be collusion in a criminal sense, because it's hard to not, there's sort of an interesting dynamic whenever you have people filing amicus briefs. They want to be aligned with the party they're supporting. Now I think it's the decision to file an amicus brief in this case is kind of bizarre, especially in support of a law firm where you have people who are employed by the state, but yet seem to be serving the interests of the law firm they used to work for. And I think there might be there's probably an ethical issue with those specific attorneys. Maybe they shouldn't be involved in this case. Maybe they shouldn't be trying to wield the office of state in the favor of a private law firm. But I, you know, I have a hard time seeing a criminal case for conflict of interest here or anything like that, because I'm not sure what the crime would be.
And how about any other remedies then for the Trump administration? And so, you know, the story goes on to say that one day after Perkins Coie filed its lawsuit against the Trump administration in March, Attorney General Brown led a coalition of 21 attorneys general in filing an amicus brief in support of Perkins Coie. So Brown's office did not disclose its 10 active contracts with the law firm in the court filing, and the front of the court, you know, brief was filed obviously to influence the court's decisions. So is there any potential, you know, remedy here to suggest that perhaps, you know, there's a procedural problem in light of this type of collusion?
I mean, I guess there are two remedies that would come to mind. The one is for the brief to be struck for failure to properly disclose these things if they were required to be disclosed by the court here in the case. The second would be obviously sort of professional ethics type arguments where, you mean, saying knowingly hiding something like this from the court would be seen as an ethical violation, a violation of the duty of candor. But I think that's the extent of it based on what you're telling me. I don't think it goes further than that.
Yeah. And you know, and this just, I think, from the political side, just further evidences how coordinated a lot of this lawfare is against the Trump administration, against Donald Trump personally, against his, you know, his various campaigns over the last several election cycles. And you know, Will Chamberlain, you are senior counsel at the Article III Project, and you and Mike Davis have been very vocal about pushing back against this type of lawfare. And, you know, is there or what else, I suppose, is the better question? What else should our audience know about, you know, the ongoing lawfare and the pushback against this? Because, you know, President Trump and his administration is just taking so much time, effort, and expense to fight some of these really, frankly, frivolous and even I would characterize it as malicious litigation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on in a lot of different courts. I think the key takeaway is that whenever you hear somebody say there's a constitutional crisis, that crisis is being created by the judiciary. It's not being created by Trump. They're going way beyond their purview to restrain the president in areas that are very much core Article II authorities. And I mean, you have cases where, you know, courts are demanding that the administration disclose its diplomatic contacts with other countries, totally out of line. So I think that's, and I think ultimately the Trump administration is going to prevail on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, Will Chamberlain, really appreciate your time here. We need to take a break here, but you can follow Will Chamberlain, senior counsel at the Article III Project on X. And, you know, this is why all of the limited powers that are given to the federal government actually matter. It matters that they exercise their authority appropriately and, yeah, not go outside the bounds of their authority. But when their authority matters, like enforcing immigration law and the executive, like actually funding the personnel, like Congress can do and should do, and then also the judiciary, ensuring that they adjudicate this properly. Those are things that hopefully the federal government will continue to do. And this is why we need to understand what the powers are, how they should be overall expressed, and how they should be administered. And so it really matters here. And we'll continue to follow this story, but we'll be right back with more on the political side of the LA riots right after this.
The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, as we continue to talk about the ongoing riots in LA that may be spreading to a city near you soon, Newsom's non-cooperation with federal law enforcement is putting Californians at risk, and any other State governors or local mayors that do the same are also putting their citizens at risk, and none more likely than first responders, who Newsom and Mayor Karen Bass are using as buffers between the mayhem and the overall actually peaceful citizenry. So White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller posted this on X. California is the largest sanctuary state in America. The state has ordered every police department and sheriff's office in the state not to cooperate with federal immigration enforcement, even if they have committed grievous crimes. Illegals are given free welfare, health care, and every other conceivable state benefit. They are made immune in every way. Simply put, the government of the state of California aided, abetted, and conspired to facilitate the invasion of the United States. I think that's incredibly well put. Well, Chris Ekstrom, who is a board member of U.S. Term Limits, has an op-ed that is coming out soon in The Blaze, talking about the riots and how Donald Trump is the man of the hour and is actually looking at this very clearly. So he joins us now. And Chris, I think that overall, like we've seen with some of the other leftist tactics that just really run against the sovereignty of the United States, this is going to backfire on them. And I think politically, this is only advantageous to Donald Trump.
Good morning, Jenna. This is such a terrible mess. But I think many people who have preferred to sort of stay in their comfort zone and not pay close attention to politics, and there are Christians like that, and that's why I'm glad to be with you, especially today, because of your audience, who I think could be really pivotal in this situation. They need to look and watch Mayor Bass. Mayor Bass is an unapologetic cultural Marxist who basically is blaming everybody else but the policies of California, long-standing policies of California, for the crisis that's in L.A. We're seeing on the streets, no matter what they say, this is a crisis. And this lady is up there every day basically blaming everybody else except her policies and the state of California's policies for the disorder, for the chaos that we're all witnessing on TV every day. It reminds me of during the worst part of Vietnam, when you had people coming on trying to explain everything away and tell you, don't worry about it, there's light at the end of the tunnel, it's all going to be okay. And we end up with helicopters taking people off the top of an embassy roof. We are at the stage where if President Trump is not supported in these insane blue states by masses of people, they need to start doing something for themselves too. We're going to end up with the helicopters coming to evacuate people in metaphorically. And that's how extreme it is. This is a very, very extreme situation.
Yeah, it is. And I think that cannot be understated. You know, this isn't just as cavalier as Gavin Newsom would suggest when he's going on TV, you know, just callously and I think flippantly baiting Donald Trump. Well, you know, come arrest me, you know, whatever. It's it looks like a petulant toddler with a beef. And, you know, yet I think Stephen Miller's comment is incredibly important to acknowledge and underscore that California is the largest sanctuary state in America. And by definition, I think, you know, sanctuary states are, and the legal view of that is so problematic to a nation of laws and a nation of order. To say that, you know, we are carving out this space within the sovereign nation and the territory of the United States of America to just be like, yeah, you know, we don't like the federal law, we don't like what the law says, so we're carving out this specific area to just say, hey, you know, it doesn't matter what federal law says, we're going to do something different, is really problematic. And we're seeing that ideology play out here.
Well, that's right. And this is the deeper dive that you're not going to hear in the normal press, even our own press that's sympathetic. Cultural Marxism and Marxism in general regards law as a fig leaf. They don't believe in God, right? They don't believe in our really democratic procedures. What they believe in is a sort of one-party totalitarian state, if they could get it, in which they impose their views. So they're not sitting around troubled about the civil liberties of somebody who may be mistakenly arrested. That's all fake. The way they view this is it's chaos that they have created, and they know they created, and now it's playing out, and they are reveling in it. I mean, you have the mayor of the city who's not even talking about the actual violence and the riotous behavior other than to say she condemns it once in a while. But her main focus is, oh, this should never have happened in the first place because we just don't want to have our illegal aliens expelled from the country. And we are not going to cooperate with that. As you pointed out about what Stephen Miller says, and he's totally spot on, these people are proud to not cooperate with the legal authorities in pursuing this policy, which is by an elected president who won the popular vote, even in their own they don't care about our republic and our constitutional structures. They want to simply assert constantly that the will of the people is in this direction. No, the will of the people is to get this sorted out. And frankly, I've never seen something in my lifetime that was more disturbing than the open, unapologetic hatred, basically, towards America that I'm seeing right now every time I turn on the TV.
So well said. And I'm speaking with Chris Ekstrom, who is a board member of U.S. Term Limits, has a number of great pieces in the Blaze, including one that will be forthcoming today or tomorrow. You can continue to check that out at the Blaze, talking about the politics of this riot. And it's such a great point that, you know, while the left is suggesting that they're somehow defenders of democracy, they're the ones that are trying purposefully to tear down our national sovereignty, to make an absolute mockery of the U.S. Constitution, to promote this type of cultural Marxism and, frankly, authoritarianism. Because like I was suggesting earlier in the show, I mean, this mirrors 2020 in the sense that, you know, it's Gavin Newsom that's now suggesting that Trump is going beyond his executive authority when he's merely enforcing immigration law that is a specifically federal subject matter, when he himself so grievously violated and overextended the executive authority in his own state. And he's saying that in a legal document with a straight face that clearly he doesn't even believe in. And so the arguments that the left say in the media and even in court filings, that's not even what we necessarily should respond to, because they are just posturing. It gets to something a lot deeper, that they genuinely hate the United States of America. They hate national sovereignty. They want a globalist society. They want a total state of authoritarianism. And they are trying to get there by any way imaginable, including trying to convince their own activist judges to help them tear down the U.S. Constitution.
Well, the last piece that they really need was to have censorship of the digital media. And that is something, obviously, they've aspired towards. They've achieved that, by the way, globalists, I'm speaking of as a sort of vague group, in Brazil. You basically cannot criticize the state in certain ways in Brazil, or you're probably going to be arrested. And that's happening as we speak in a really large and important country to our south. Look, these things all do come together at a certain point, and you can see it in the obsession that Mayor Bass has with President Trump being the one who used the National Guard and brought the National Guard into the whole story, and God forbid the Marines, right? They're terrified that the Marines go in there and just sort this out and put an end to this ridiculous situation. She wants Trump to allow Governor Newsom to do what he should have done in the first place. Why? Is that because she wants to make it better? No, because she wants to take control of this as a narrative and draw it out as some sort of peaceful demonstration against our immigration policy. I mean, it is so perverse and so insane that it is literally satanic. This is
well said.
The American people are watching a satanic ploy of the left. And by the way, it wouldn't be a Chris Ekstrom interview if I didn't put the spotlight on some bad Republicans. There are people who consider themselves libertarians and Republicans who are open borders. I'm thinking of the Koch brothers in particular and some of their allies. They are part of this picture.
Absolutely. We got to leave it there. But so well said, we need to be praying for the future of our country. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.